Then the men were even more afraid and said to him, "What is this that you have done?" For the men knew that he was fleeing from the presence of the Lord, because he had told them so. Jonah chapter 1, verse 10.
Hey everybody, I'm Chris Dowd.
And I'm Reagan Gilliland.
And this is Off Script, the podcast where every week we take a deeper dive on last Sunday's sermon, talk about the theology behind it, and get a chance to talk about anything that didn't make it in, that ended up on the cutting room floor. I'm excited to get started today because Reagan preached on Sunday, and we get to talk about her interpretation of the first two chapters of a book that I love, Jonah.
I feel like it was really smart alecky already.
No, I thought your sermon was great.
Thanks.
And I thought the way you handled those first two chapters was great. And I mean, I'll probably go in a different direction a little bit, but I thought, yeah, I always enjoy hearing you preach.
Well, thanks.
So let's start with this.
Okay.
So Jonah is found in there's 12 books in the Bible that Christians anyway refer to as the minor prophets. So my question is, in general, what do you think of prophets? You're a fan, you're not a fan, you like reading them, you don't like reading them?
Yeah. So we've kind of talked about how the minor prophets get really repetitive, because they are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a, you've done bad, you've strayed, repent, be loyal to God. You know, it's just kind of that message over and over again. But I really, really like the minor prophets a lot. I think they're good books to visit time and time again. Again, a lot of they're short. Because I think it reminds me, it kind of reveals to me maybe how I've wandered a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And I also think some of the books really mess with my interpretation or my belief of who, or at least in the books, like people have a really weird concept of who's actually the bad guys, you know, because you've got these people that have been disobedient to God. And then they've got this prophet saying, sometimes, you know, this other group, whether it's the Babylonians or whoever, are going to come and destroy you. And they're like, how could that happen? Like, they're so evil.
Right.
And it's like, no, like, what makes them worse than you? Like, you haven't been doing things. And so I think it kind of reminds me of not saying, well, those are the people that are bad, I'm the good one. How dare something happen to me? So just a good reminder, I think, in general, to read these books to remind us how we should be living, and then not to get so high on yourself. I think those are really good messages for us to revisit.
Yeah, I mean, because prophets kind of say, well, y'all should know better.
Right.
They're pagans. They don't know it. They don't even know God.
Mm-hmm.
Huh. All right, so how does Jonah fit in with those other prophets? Similar, different?
He is definitely different because the big thing is he runs away. He doesn't say yes, he doesn't go. And he doesn't spend a lot of time telling people what's wrong or what needs to happen. You know, it's a very brief. The other prophets usually kind of go on more. There's a lot more that they say, because of this, this will happen, this will happen. So he's similar in that aspect. But I think Jonah, because he really doesn't want to do it, I mean, he's just different because he says no. He kind of runs away from it.
Yeah, okay, so this is probably a good spot. So paraphrase those first two chapters for us.
Jonah says no is a punk.
And wait, Jonah says no to what? So, stop insulting Jonah.
I know.
You're way too down on Jonah.
It's so easy. So, you know, God comes to him and says, you know, you need to go to this great city, Nineveh, and basically tell them, you know, to repent. Jonah buys a ticket, goes in the very opposite direction, finds himself on this boat with these sailors. There's a big storm. The sailors are freaking out, and then eventually Jonah's like, well, you know, throw me over. And then they throw him over. Not, you know, we'll talk about this probably, but like, they weren't very happy about that option. The sailors really struggled with that. And then this big fish swallows him, and we read this very long prayer that Jonah says. And so we think, oh, Jonah's maybe turning, and then the fish spits him out, and that's how it ends.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and then I'll pick it up from there next
Correct.
Week.
Yes.
So, okay. So, who was your preaching brother?
I had Dr. McKenzie.
McKenzie. So her big thing was focus statement. Mm-hmm. So what was your focus statement for the sermon? Like, what was the thing you were trying to tell us in the sermon? Other than your incorrect assessment of Jonah's worthiness.
I think really the point I was saying was the call of God really requires us to do things that often we don't want to do.
Good. Okay. So you say at the top that at the beginning of the sermon that Jonah has long puzzled scholars.
Yeah.
In what ways?
So I think the biggest thing in my research is they have a hard time placing Jonah when it was actually written. Hmm. You know, usually there's some clues, like when an actual king is named, but in this it just says the king of Nineveh. There's no name attached to it. And then some of the language, like how they refer to God, there's different combinations of, like, there's Yahweh, and then sometimes Yahweh, Elohim, and, like, all these, which in some of the longer books, like, let's say Isaiah, you know, things may fluctuate because it's maybe over a longer period of time and maybe more people contributing. But as I said, this book is really short. It's 48 verses. Yep. And so there just seems to be a collection of different things. And so they don't know how it was pieced together, how long. So it's kind of puzzled. And then I almost feel like some of the chapters kind of stand on their own a little bit. And so there's different themes. There's a lot of different things in each chapter, I feel like, you take away. And so some scholars are like, you know, there's not one long, big theme through it. There's a lot of things that come. So that's just kind of what I read. But scholars are just like, it's kind of an interesting book. It's different.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, for sure it is. So, okay. Why did the Ninevites have such a nasty reputation? Like, what? And this begins my issue with how you're treating Jonah.
Okay.
Because, like, if God, it's like, what would be the comparison today? God said, go, get up and go to who?
Oh, gosh. Who do we think is evil? That's a good question.
Like, ISIS?
Probably.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, Reagan, I got a deal for you?
Yeah.
I want you to fly to, I mean, ISIS, I guess, is a little dated. I want you to fly to Yemen today.
Okay.
And say to all these people who hated us and done terrible things to us that God's going to destroy them.
Okay.
How would you react to that, honestly?
I would be like, yes, Lord. I will do it, and gladly.
Lies.
I know, it is a total lie.
Anyway, sorry. So why did the Ninevites have such a nasty reputation?
So Nineveh is the capital of the Assyrian Empire. Mm-hmm. And so I had to, like, we always read about how terrible they were, or, it's hinted at. So I was like, okay, what did they do? What kind of stuff did they do?
Yeah, yeah.
And so I was reading, and, they were really known for really torturing people pretty bad. Like, cutting tongues out, skinning humans alive.
Yes.
What is the thing with lions? Like, I just feel like there's lions all the time. Like, somehow they use that for torture. I'm like, how do they get them there? How do they keep them fed?
Do
they give them figs? Like, I've been over in that area. You don't eat a lot of heavy things. So I'm like, how do they keep them fed?
There's not a lot of lions either.
Yeah, there's not a lot of lions. I didn't see one. And, like, grinding, like, they would make you grind bones of your loved, like, I mean, really.
They were awful.
Horrific.
Yes.
Horrific things. And so when it says go to this great city, it doesn't mean, like, this great city that's, like, one, it's not Disney World.
Right.
But this powerful urban city, trade, a lot is going on there. There's just a lot of power there.
Okay.
So, yeah.
So God says, have I got a deal for you? I want you to go to Nineveh. And Jonah, I mean, do we even know that Jonah's a prophet at that point? Like, as far as we know, he's just a guy.
Yeah, that's true.
He's not named as a prophet.
Yeah.
So it's like this random guy gets a random call for God to go to the worst place on the earth where he will surely die.
Uh-huh.
Running the other way seemed reasonable to me.
I know, but I'm like, I don't know.
All right,
I think I'd be scared too. What would happen if, I don't know. I just feel like, okay, but God could do something to me if I don't.
So in the sermon, you come out and say you're not a fan of Jonah.
Correct.
Just now you said.
Was it obvious?
You downplayed it a little. I mean, you didn't come right out and say he was a punk like you just did. Jeez, that's like podcast language apparently.
Yep.
So fundamentally, what is it about Jonah that you don't like? Follow-up question. Do you think Jesus agrees with you?
Yes.
Spoiler alert, Jesus does not.
Jesus agrees with me on all things forever. Okay, so here's the thing. I don't like Jonah because it is so us. It's us in the story. And I don't like to read about how much I mess up.
Okay. There you go.
So
now you're on to something.
You know, the whole, like, I read it, and of course I'm my holier than thou. I was like, how could he do that? How could he not do what God asked him?
Yes.
But how many times has God asked us to do things like you should give more money? I'm not going to do that.
How dare you?
Right. Or you should stop and talk to that person who's having a hard time. I don't have time for that. Mm. Like, I read it because it's so revealing about how much I say no to God.
Yeah.
And I don't like to read
that. Yeah, okay, good. That's fair. That's fair. I'm 100% with you there.
Okay.
So one of the things that I appreciate about your preaching is that you clearly do a deep dive on, I mean, I don't know if you've studied Hebrew, but you clearly do the commentary work to kind of pull out these fun facts about the whatever the text is.
Yeah.
It's fantastic. I mean, it's clear that you spend the time doing it. So my first question is, what was the most fun thing that you learned about the text, whether it made it in the sermon or not?
Because I'm a 13-year-old boy, the whole, like, that the fish vomits.
Yeah, oh,
you know,
yeah. That's
anything,
a very specific word. Yeah.
Anytime I can find some sort of, like, gross or potty humor,
yes,
I'm all about it. I think that's fun. But really, yeah, things like that. And I did mention that in the sermon, so that didn't make it into the sermon. I'm trying to think what else. Thinking about the boat, and when I talk about how Jonah, like, he went down to the very safe spot of the boat, I think about, oh man, what a jerk.
He puts everyone in danger, and then he goes to be as safe as he possibly can.
Yeah.
At the beginning, yeah, that's true. So then process-wise, how is it that you, like, how do you learn about this? Do you speak Hebrew? Like, did you study Hebrew?
Okay. I didn't.
So then, like, how, I mean, most people don't.
Right.
So what's your approach to finding out these fun facts about the text? Do you have some go-to commentaries? Do you have a specific process that you follow?
Yeah. I started my sermon by reading my son's Bible, which, honestly, I think it is fun to go read, okay, how does this summed up in just a few words or a few lines?
Yeah.
And so with these common stories like, or Sunday school stories, Jonah, Noah, Daniel, all those, I think it's always interesting to go back. Okay, what do we tell kids to learn from this story?
Yeah, I'm with you. That was effective, by the way.
And then I have the New Interpreter's Bible commentary it's big black and green, and we have them in the library, and then we have a set at home as well.
We have them where?
In our library.
In the library here at CMC.
Yeah.
Go ahead and plug the library, because the library is pretty awesome.
The library is incredible. There's so many resources. Especially if you're like, I don't know if I can teach this book, especially if like a book of the Bible, we've got so many reference books, so many commentaries. You can check them out, take them home. There's just a wealth of knowledge in there.
Yeah, it's great.
So use it. So that, and then for my Old Testament, I took a preaching minor prophets in seminary by Rabbi Stern.
Did you really?
Yeah.
Huh.
It was so good.
Did you guys cover Jonah?
Yeah.
Huh.
He gave us a Jewish study Bible.
Huh.
He gifted everyone in the class one.
Wow,
and so
no kidding.
Yeah,
so was that Perkins?
Mm-hmm.
No kidding.
He just guest taught. I don't know if he's done it since then, but it was.
Where's he a rabbi?
Temple Emmanuel, right?
Is that the one on Northwest Highway?
Yeah, Northwest Highway.
Big one.
Mm-hmm.
Huh. Okay, that's fascinating.
Yeah, so I use that.
Those are good resources. I have to borrow that next time. Because we're doing prophets the next couple weeks in Bible 150, you know?
Yep.
So, okay. In contrast to your unfairly negative opinion of Jonah, as we've covered, you have a very high opinion, you seem to, of the sailors.
Yeah.
So talk about that.
Well, I love the sailors. Again, they're these, they don't have names.
Mm-hmm.
They're probably common sailors, you know? And just the contrast of Jonah, who we think must have had some sort of qualification to be called by God, was most likely faithful and all that. And then you put him next to these sailors that, you know, it talks about how they cry out to their own God. So they're not believing in the same thing right now, but their actions are all the things that we think that Jonah should be doing. Mm-hmm. And so putting them together, and then I love, You know, they really wrestle when Jonah says, throw me overboard, which again, Jonah has put them in danger. They don't know Jonah at all. He doesn't mean anything to him. And yet they're like, I don't think we can do that. And so they just have such a loving spirit or softness or just like a caring compassion and in this kind of devotion of like to their gods, like, God, what do we do? What can we do? And then Jonah just doesn't seem to care. And so the sailors are just kind of this example to me of people that often we think we can't learn things from or we shouldn't listen to, and yet they're living lives that we proclaim that we are living, and yet we're not.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, they're kind of unexpected heroes in the story.
Yeah.
Okay, so then the next thing you hate about Jonah is his prayer.
Yeah.
You're very down on the prayer.
I am. I read it with a very sarcastic voice.
So you're going to have to explain. So people who... Not everyone may know what you meant by the out loud prayers that guys use to woo the ladies. So talk about that.
Well, okay. So in college ministry, when I was in college, you know, these guys would always like, okay, let's pray. And then they would just say these really lofty, long prayers. And, you know, if they could quote something or if they could just use these big words or these really holy kind of. And I just felt like, you don't mean any of that. Like, you are just trying to get a date. Especially because in the college ministry, I was in, like, I mean, you dated. Like, your first date was like, okay, we're going to get married. Like, that was just, everyone got engaged and got married. So it was just, you know, very thankful for that ministry. Formed me greatly.
To clarify, you did not meet Scott.
I did not. I didn't meet him until ministry. A long time later. Yeah. Okay. I went to a lot of weddings in college. So by the time my friends came to my wedding, they had like two kids. So that's just...
Follow up. They're all still together?
Yeah, they're all still together.
Excellent. Okay, yeah. Very good.
So this prayer just... And again, I don't like Jonah because I've prayed this prayer too.
Okay. So like for example.
Well, just the like, let's see, especially the part of... at the end, like, but I, this is verse 9, but I will, with the voice of thanksgiving, will sacrifice to you what I have vowed I will pay. I mean, think about all the times you're like, God, you know, if you just do this, I promise I'm going to follow through. I'm going to change. And we don't mean it and we don't do it. And the reason I have such a hard time thinking he's actually been changed or renewed, you know, in the moment, it's just the way he acts in chapter 3 and 4. And so, I don't know. I just think it's so, and for me, some of the most powerful, most honest prayers are things that are messy. You don't say the right thing. You stumble or are very, very short. You don't need this long, lofty prayer. And again, it's just so many people hesitate to pray because like, well, I don't know how to say, I'm going to say the wrong thing. And I was like, no, just say what you feel. And so this example, I'm just like, ugh, baloney, Jonah. You don't believe any of this.
All right, so you actually use the word infuriate.
Yeah.
And like you're one of the most chill people that I know. So when I heard you in the sermon say that this prayer infuriated you, I'm like, wow. I mean, it's got to take a lot to infuriate you.
Yeah.
I'm a little more up and down. So it probably takes less to, I would guess it takes less to infuriate me than you. So like, is it just because of the insincerity?
Yeah, I think so. And,
but like, does insincerity in general make you react that way?
That's a good question. That might be like phone a friend, ask Scott. So does that? I don't know. And it is weird the things that do like send me to like level 10.
Yes. Okay.
I'm not very consistent.
All right. I want to hear another one. So what's the thing that sends you to level 10?
Oh my gosh.
I'll take notes because I need to avoid them.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. I'm not consistent. Sometimes I'm like, oh, that's fine. And then sometimes it depends on the person.
So it's not. So the same thing doesn't always lead you to react the same way.
Yeah.
Got it.
I just think probably the whole thing with Jonah is like, I just want him to say, really, God, you're going to put me in this belly? Like, that's what I want him.
Okay.
Like, that's all I want him to say.
You want authenticity.
I do. Because I value that so much in people.
Okay. But then there's this very hot sports opinion you have of him.
Yeah.
So I'm going to quote you.
Okay.
So the fish, the big fish, not a whale, that's a whole separate conversation.
It's Free Willy.
Says, or you say, because, so the, oh, sorry. So the whale throws him up on the beach. Mm-hmm. Because, this is, now I'm quoting Regan Gilliland. Okay. Because the taste of this, dishonest, prideful, and unwilling prophet is disgusting to stomach.
Boom.
Dang. So, I mean, I think we've established why you feel that way about him. My question is, are there other biblical characters that you feel this way about? Or is this especially reserved for...
just for Jonah?
Like, let's say, hypothetically speaking, a whale swallows any other character in the Bible.
Yeah.
Do they also get vomited up because of this dishonest, prideful, unwilling taste?
Oh, gosh. I think all the characters at one point are this dishonest, prideful, and...
Not all.
Okay.
There's one significant exception.
Okay, who's that?
This is a pass-fail. A biblical character who's not that?
Well, besides Jesus?
Okay, no. Jesus okay, is what I'm going for. Okay.
I don't count.
But like Abraham, Abraham's not like that.
I don't know. Abraham.
Moses?
I don't know. Sometimes they...
Deborah?
I don't know. Okay.
Ruth?
Oh my gosh. I'm just saying, I feel like... Okay, here's again, because I'm trying to think, how am I in this story? These characters. I think we just get really, again, high on ourselves or think like, oh, I've got it right. And I think we don't understand that so much of our actions and our words, like, I think because especially in Methodism, like, because grace is so important, which it is. I'm not trying to be like, oh, we should have less grace. No, we need more grace. But I think there's sometimes
now,
like...
Now, that would be a very hot sports
that opinion. Would be. But I just think people are like, well, it just doesn't matter. It's not that big of a deal. And so I think we need to realize how we live, how we speak, how we treat others does really matter. And has, and not that God's going around being like, oh, gosh, I just don't like you. Look, you know, but I think we've just gotten really lazy in our devotion and how we live. And so I think thinking about, oh, gosh, that was probably, if we do something or say something, how that affects or impacts people, what kind of witness in the world that is. I think we need to think about, oh, gosh, that's probably disgusting to stomach. I don't know. Which I know is harsh, but sometimes I think we need strong language and strong visuals to knock us out of, like, just going about our day. I don't know. I know it's really strong, but I'm just trying to get a point across. You're giving me a look like you are so off your rocker, but.
No, it's not that you're off your rocker. It's just very uncharacteristic.
Yeah.
Of how you normally show up in the world.
I know. Sometimes I just get fired up. Man, I just got to say it.
That's true. Okay. That's good.
Yeah.
All right. So here's the question. So your issue with Jonah is that he doesn't respond to God's call.
Mm-hmm.
So here, I want you to talk about a time in your life that you followed God's call.
Mm-hmm.
And it can't be going into ministry. That's okay. Too much of a go-to for pastors.
Yeah.
And then a time when, had you been swallowed by a fish, you would have been thrown up on the shore for being Jonah-esque.
Okay. I don't know if I have a story for that, Chris. I'm pretty perfect. So, okay, a call... I thought I was going to just tell ministry story, like my call into ministry.
I mean, that people probably need to hear that too. I don't know if you've told that here yet.
I've told a little bit in Sunday school classes, some. Not into ordained ministry, but I think when I got out of college and I really had no direction because I knew I was really wrestling with going into ministry, but at the time, my brother above me was going through a divorce and, you know, I was really trying to find jobs. I was interviewing, but I felt like I needed to go be with him and live with him and figure out stuff there. Or when I was applying for jobs later, you know, when you make this promise to follow God, you're like, I really will go anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's been points in my life where I really have said, okay, I'll go anywhere. I'll apply anywhere. And I have applied all over the country to places. And I think having that assurance or that trust that God will be with you wherever you go. And so I think for me, it's stepping out without fear and knowing, okay, if you call me, I'm going to go. And so I see that in Jonah. Mm-hmm. Like, if God calls you, you go, no matter how far, no matter how scary, intimidating it may mm-hmm. go. So that's kind of a faithful example, I guess, which brought me to Dallas mm-hmm. because I moved to Dallas where I didn't know anyone in Dallas. Mm-hmm. And so that was a pretty big move. All my family was in Kansas.
Yep, that is a big move. And you heard your call to ministry after that.
Yeah.
The Torah Dane ministry.
Yes.
And, I mean, you just recently moved, mm-hmm. which is a form of trust.
Yeah.
In God.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean.
We're all glad you did, by the way.
Yeah, choosing to have a new appointment mm-hmm. is a very, and it was doubly kind of scary because my husband and I, since we're both pastors, we were willing to go to different churches.
Yeah, I mean, that's a big.
It's a major disrupt. Yeah. You know, it's disrupted yeah. our lives in a wonderful way.
Well, yeah, but I mean, that's real.
Yeah.
Because your kids aren't in the same place with both their parents every Sunday.
Right.
I mean, that's no minor thing.
It is, you know, so it was a lot. There's a lot of tears. And then Jonah moment. Gosh, there's probably a lot, Chris. Probably in some ways that I have not forgiven people, probably. I'm very good at holding grudges, like incredibly good. And I don't always know. Again, I'm not very consistent. So you never know what's going to be the thing that like tips me over. It's so random. But I think those moments of when and God saying, you know, you need to repair that relationship, you need to forgive. And I'm like, heck no. Mm-hmm. I'm going to cut that person off. Mm-hmm. And so I'm probably still in the belly of the fish.
So did you ever watch the old Colbert show mm-hmm. before he took over?
Yeah.
You remember the dead to me board?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And there were like so many slots on the dead to me board, yep. but you know, it was like Diet Coke and bears were always on there.
Uh-huh.
Then, you know, various like celebrities of some kind would yeah. end up on there. That's the visual for me.
Yeah.
I have an internal one of those too.
All right.
Okay. So here's the question. If you read Jonah as satire,
mm-hmm.
speaking of Colbert, by the way,
yeah,
does that change your opinion of him as a character?
Yeah, and I go into it, and I know that it is a very humorous kind of story, and it is a satire, and so maybe it lessens my emotions against it, but I think even in satires, obviously there's still much to learn mm-hmm. and
right. Oh, yeah, that's the point of satire. So that's where I'm going to go with chapters 3 and 4.
Yeah,
this next Sunday. Okay, any last thoughts before we wrap up?
My take on Jonah is the correct one, and my sermon will be better than yours. No, I said this in the sermon. You know, this story is just a really good reminder for me is that sometimes we really aren't as a good example as we think we are, you know, and we need to be open to people that are on the outside, those that are the margins, those that are seem to be forgotten. The sailors have no name. Think about all those people in the world that we don't give a name to or attention to, and how we should learn from them. I think that's just what has kind of stuck with me since I read through this again. So yeah, that's pretty much it. And when God calls you to do things, it's going to be hard, but I guarantee it's probably worth it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's good. That's really good. So I always enjoy hearing you preach.
Thanks.
And your next time on the calendar for preaching is when?
Let's see. I think I'm second week of Lent.
Lent 2. So that is February?
Mm-hmm. 28th.
February 28th.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Very good. Well, I look forward to that. All right, y'all. Thank you very much for joining us on Off Script. We have covered the first half of Jonah. Next week, we'll cover the second half of Jonah. It's always a blessing to be with you. Have a fantastic week.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of Off Script. It was hosted by Reverend Chris Dowd and Reverend Reagan Gilliland. Produced by Ashley Danner as a part of the Christ United Podcast Ministries. You can visit cumc.com/podcasts in order to see all of the series we have available. Like, subscribe, and follow us so that you don't miss a single episode. Thank you for supporting us. Have a great week.